I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. Why is the Seattle Times hiding a key detail about the man accused of kidnapping a 15-year-old girl and raping her in the woods? Plus, foster families in Washington state may no longer have to adhere to radical gender ideology. And let the Constitution wars begin. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for $5 a month. And right now, in the month of May, we're running our once yearly promo. You get 30% off an entire year. So it's a screaming deal. It brings the monthly cost down to like $3.50. So if you'd like to support our work, our show, everything we do here on Undivided, sign up at patreon.com/undivided. That's patreon.com/undivided. Use the promo code USA30. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. A warning, it is a heavy topic to start the show with today. It's going to center around a case you've probably heard about by now. A man who pulled a 15-year-old girl in Seattle from a bus stop, took her into the woods where he sexually assaulted her. I want to go through the details of the charging documents in this case because I think this story gets at the heart of a lot of things that are going wrong in deep blue jurisdictions on the criminal justice front, but also a lot of things that are going wrong in the press. So a man named Joshua Kowalewski, 36 years old, is the suspect in this case. This happened in North Seattle. He is charged with two counts. Count one, rape in the first degree. Count two, kidnapping in the second degree. Now I'm going to read you a little bit of a description of what happened in this case. Again, it's difficult to hear, but I think it's important to describe the horror of what he's accused of doing. It says, in this case, the defendant approached a young teenager who was waiting for her bus to arrive to take her to school. The defendant repeatedly asked the victim questions to include her age. The victim informed the defendant that she was 15 years old. The defendant then forced this young girl into the woods, forced her to the ground, prevented her from leaving, and covered her mouth to prevent her from screaming. The defendant warned her not to scream and then forced his penis into this child's mouth and orally raped her for 30 seconds before she was able to escape. Thankfully, a construction worker across the street heard this child's screams and called 911. The victim ran out of the woods crying and terrified, so police were able to respond. And then a short time later, I just wanted to note this because it's going to come relevant to the background of this individual. He was like in the middle of a street nearby, starting a fire, and the fire department responded to it. Apparently, he was trying to burn the shirt he was wearing and perhaps feces. So it like defecated in the street and used that to like light this shirt on fire. So Seattle Fire Department responded. He matched the description that police had put out about the alleged attacker, so he was taken into custody. What do we know about him? Well, we know this. Not a surprise. Homeless, 36-year-old male with a significant criminal history that includes 28 arrests and 13 convictions over the last 19 years. His convictions include assault, DUI, possession and use of controlled substances, violating a protection order, theft, making or having burglary tools and criminal trespass. A lot of crimes very consistent with someone who is using drugs, living on the streets. Currently, he has multiple active warrants from several jurisdictions. It says he has 9 active warrants across 5 jurisdictions, to be specific. And in total, he's had 46 warrants for his arrest issued for failing to appear since 2008. So he is indeed a flight risk. Now, his last known address is one of those instances where I saw it on the police report. I knew exactly where it was. It's 410 Second Avenue Extension South in Seattle. I knew immediately because I've been there. That's the Chief Seattle Club's affordable housing for the homeless. And I think what's interesting, it says, so this is housing assistance offered at Chief Seattle Club. And this is specifically offered for American Indians and Alaska Natives with proof of tribal affiliation or tribal descendancy, paperwork, Pacific Islanders and Native Hawaiianers, et cetera. So that is his last known address. Whether he's still living there or not is unclear, but we already knew he was homeless. So not a surprise that perhaps he was getting a place to live from Chief Seattle Club. And yes, you, the taxpayer. All right, a little bit more on the criminal history, because this gets into the real failure of our criminal justice system. You have, as you have with so many of these instances, someone who just cycles in and out of the system, is clearly, you know, using and abusing drugs, living on the street, a danger to everyone around him. Yet at every stage, Washington State's criminal justice system just gives him a little slap on the wrist. Oh, you scurry on now, head back out to the streets to do drugs and defecate in the streets and allegedly rape teen girls. So it says the defendant has multiple pending criminal charges across numerous jurisdictions. So these are pending, okay? So this is important, pending. So these cases haven't even been fully adjudicated yet, likely because he keeps failing to appear. So in King County District Court, he has one for VUXA, which is violation of the Uniform Controlled Substances Act. That's a 2026 case. In Edmonds Municipal Court, theft in the third degree and obstruction of law enforcement, also from 2026. And yeah, we're only in the fifth month of the year. He also has a pending case in Olympia Municipal Court, VUXA again, criminal trespass, theft in the third degree, all from 2005. So he gets up and down the I-5 corridor, Olympia, Edmonds, King County. He has a pending case in Puyallup Municipal Court, theft in the third degree, obstruction, VUXA, possession. The defendant also has three pending matters in Seattle Municipal Court for drug possession and carrying a concealed weapon. And in those cases, despite all this active criminal history, so these were 2025, okay? So in City of Seattle, he's charged with violation of the Uniform Controlled Substances Act and carrying a concealed weapon. And what do? They give him a Seattle drug prosecution alternative on April 28th, 2026, which was just 1 week before he allegedly dragged this girl into the woods and raped her. A condition of that program is the defendant not commit any further law violations. Well, you know, that's kind of his thing. Yet despite that condition, 1 week later, he commits the violent sex offense, according to police. And when you really think about that, though, and this is the failure and the breakdown in the system, as that lays out, when he was charged with the drug possession and carrying a weapon, a concealed weapon, by the city of Seattle, he already had open active warrants in other jurisdictions for failing to appear on identical charges. Drug charges, theft, multiple jurisdictions. And they still decide that this is the guy who they want to give a Seattle drug prosecution alternative to. This is what happens when you elect a socialist to be the city's top prosecutor. Because if you're going to say, oh, you know, we've got an alternative, and I think that there are some people who are perfectly suitable for alternatives to jail time, where you give them a chance to turn their lives around, you connect them to treatment and say, hey, let's try to get better so we're not out there committing these sorts of crimes, right? And I'm talking about the low-level crimes. Still serious, though. Still impact people, still victimize people, but theft in the third degree, personal possession of narcotics. But this is a guy who, as they said, what was it earlier? 46 warrants issued for failure to appear since 2008, 28 arrests, 13 criminal convictions over 19 years. And all those pending cases, when they went to court in Seattle and decided on April 28th to send him on his way and say, hey, just don't break the law again. As he's awaiting trial for breaking the law up and down the I-5 corridor. Elections have consequences. A week later, he drags this 15-year-old girl, allegedly, away from the bus stop into the woods where he sexually assaults her. So all of that is bad enough, and frankly, not a surprise in Seattle. This crime, as horrific as it is, just another day in what used to be one of the most wonderful cities on earth. But here's what I will never get used to. I will never brush it away and ignore it because it's become so commonplace. The media coverage of issues like this. What do you think is the one fact of this story that the Seattle Times decided to leave out of all its coverage thus far? You already know, because it's easy to guess. They didn't mention that he's homeless. They called him a stranger. Stranger charged with kidnapping, rape of teen near Seattle bus stop, man jailed in luring, sexual assault of teen near Seattle bus stop. Not in the title, in the headline, not in any of the body of the story. No mention that he's homeless. Hell, I would have even taken unhoused in this instance. No mention that this is a guy living on the streets, drugged up, hurting people, stealing things, obstructing police officers. And yes, it is relevant. Yes, it is relevant. And I ask you, in looking at that and considering that coverage of this, who is the Seattle Times trying to protect? The homeless alleged rapist? Because they're certainly not trying to protect the community. They're certainly not trying to protect law-abiding citizens of Seattle who deserve to have an accurate picture as to the public safety risks associated with being a city with an out-of-control homeless crisis and an out-of-control drug crisis and an out-of-control mental illness crisis. The public deserves a clear picture of that. And it doesn't have a clear picture because of entities like the Seattle Times. And that's why the same morons keep getting elected to office and the same sort of political ideology and socialist to the mayor's office and socialist to the city attorney's office. Because for a lot of Seattleites who rely on an entity like the Seattle Times, it's all roses. Oh, this is just a stranger. So it's just some violent man who decided going out looking for a victim. Yeah, he is a violent man, allegedly, who went out looking for a victim. But he was also living on the streets. And he also has a long criminal history associated with crimes committed by a vagrant population, a transient population. So to me, that's one of the most important details. That is one of the most critical telling details. Not to mention, he was found burning a pile of shit in a t-shirt in the middle of a roadway, and that's how they captured him. It's one of the most telling details and important details to contextualize the story for readers, and the Seattle Times decides to leave it out. That's not an accident. It's an intentional decision, and here's what I want you to do. I want you to email the editor of the Seattle Times today and ask them, why did you choose to leave out the fact that this individual is homeless? And ask for a genuine response. I really want to know the editorial decision-making as to why you did not believe that that was a relevant detail for readers to understand. And they do this all the time. Some of the most violent crimes that we've had committed in downtown Seattle and elsewhere, random crimes against people, and it's a homeless person, they leave it out. They want you to think that it's just some person with a house and a family out there, you know, just attacking people at random. Because they don't want you to vilify the homeless population. Well, there's a lot of people in the homeless population who deserve to be vilified, and they've earned it. And this guy is one of them. The Seattle Times is straight trash. Disgusting. I didn't want to play our little Seattle Times is trash thing because it's too funsy. And this is not funsy. This is disgusting. Update on another horrible attack in Seattle. This one at 3rd and Pine, right where people are going to be flooding for the World Cup in a couple weeks. Here's the video. You've seen it all over the place by now. Two young black men. Innocent 77-year-old man walking down the streets. They attack him for no reason. Don't even take anything from him. Wasn't even like, I don't think they do. I think they put something in his hand there, right? Like a thing of water, almost like, oh, here you go. Here's a thing of water. We just beat you. And then just carry on their way like no big deal. Nobody comes to help the man, which is one of the worst parts of all of this. Atrocious. I totally understand why this has gone over the all over the place nationally. And the elderly man thankfully survived, but he suffered some pretty serious injuries. So as you know, they almost immediately identified one of the attackers as 29-year-old Ahmed Osman. But they still can't find him, which is problematic. They are requesting that when he's found, that bail be set at $200,000 based on his likelihood to commit a violent offense. As you know, he was arrested, but then they have to like get their case together. And so it sounded like they released him and then they got their case together, went to file these charges. And now he's poof, nowhere to be seen. David Rose with Fox 13 put out a picture of him. There he is, 29-year-old Ahmed Osman. David Rose says, Seattle police are asking for help to find Osman. Call 911 if you see him. He has a felony warrant for his arrest for assault in the second degree. And he describes this background of what happened. He said, Osman was released from jail on $5,000 bail for a separate fire alarm tampering charge 2 days after the attack, while police completed their investigation and submitted the case to prosecutors. So they arrested him, and they were basically holding him on this separate thing for tampering with a fire alarm, which isn't going to be something that is going to be able to keep you in jail for very long. So he had $5,000 bail. He was released, and now he's in the wind. It says police say they're trying to find him now. They've been unable to locate him. He has a criminal history that includes assault for criminal trespass. He also has a pending case for another assault for and another criminal trespass, theft in the third degree, fire alarm equipment tampering. To me, that also reads like the background of someone who's homeless. So I don't know if he's homeless, but that reads like the kind of charges that someone who's a transient would have. I've also received some questions, and at this point, doesn't even bother me. I'm going to say it. Is he in the country legally?
Yeah, technically on the... I want to know. I did see his address listed as Auburn, but why is he downtown all the time committing all these crimes? So that could just be an address of someone, right? I don't know.
I'd like to know if he's in the country legally. Is it because of his name and the color of his skin? Yeah, sure. That's fine. I don't even care anymore. I want to know if he's in the country illegally because our criminal justice system sucks. And if there's an opportunity to get someone deported, I want them to do that. Maybe he's here legally. I don't know. So the second suspect, they were able to arrest. And that's a good update. So the individual, 27-year-old Jason Tyrell Ellion. So they were able, somebody recognized him, I guess, because he kind of has a limp and he's got a, you know, very distinct sort of way of walking. So apparently someone had recognized him. Police went to contact him. It says Detective Blackburn and I transported him. They arrested him to Seattle PD headquarters where I placed him in an interview room. I read him his Miranda rights. He agreed to talk with us. He denied being in Seattle on April 19th when this assault occurred. During the processing of his personal belongings, however, detectives located a jacket and a black knit face mask, and it appeared to be the same clothing he was wearing at the time of the assault. It says suspect Jason was transported and booked into the King County Jail for investigation of assault in the second degree. So Redmond police were able to hand him over and identify him and help with this. So thank you to the Redmond Police Department. So he had his first appearance on Tuesday afternoon. The King County prosecutors argued there was probable cause for his arrest on investigation of assault in the second degree. They asked the judge to set his bail at $200,000. However, his defense attorney gave a sad sob story. I think I read he was also wheeled in a wheelchair. Whatever. It says Mr. Ellion's defense said he had not worked since being shot in 2023 and asked for either his release on PR, which means no bail at all, or a lower bail. His defense attorney said he strenuously denies the allegation and does not know the victim or the other person arrested. After hearing from both sides, the judge set his bail at $100,000, which for this kind of crime, I'm not saying that's unusual. I think for an assault in the second degree, that's probably pretty normal. I'd like it to be higher. I think anyone who's able to walk down the street, see a vulnerable elderly man and beat him for no reason in the world is like a lock him up and throw away the key sort of situation. But you do have a constitutional right to bail. So still looking for the other guy. Can you put that picture up one more time of the suspect that's still at large, Nicole? 29-year-old Ahmed Osman. So we'll be posting that picture everywhere. I know David Rose shared it. So if you want to go share that from him, I would do that as well. We need to get this guy into custody stat. And I'll try to figure out what his country of origin is. Maybe it's the United States. Maybe you're telling me I'm a horrible racist, but I just want to know. Okay. Let's see. Coming up next, I told you I'd do a part three of my series with Jonathan Cho. I'm going to call it a part 2.5. Is that fair? Just a little update on some other video that I gathered while I was out there. And then we have some great news for foster families in Washington State who've been fighting for a long time to not have to use the preferred pronouns of kids they adopt to be deemed suitable foster parents. And it seems like there's some progress in that regard. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, there's a lot of homes going on the market right now for obvious reasons. And so that can kind of change the calculation or the amount of time it might take to sell your home. And of course, increased competition might impact what you're able to sell your home for. So you want an experienced agent in your corner. That is our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. He gets so many fantastic reviews. Kyle R. says, we had a great experience selling our house with Wes and team. Great communication, all the resources, tough negotiator, valuable advisor. He made our house shine and helped us get a tough property sold. We would 100% do business with him again. So what I would recommend doing, even if you're just at the early stages of contemplating maybe moving out of the state or moving somewhere else, I would go to sellwithwes.com and ask Wes for a free market analysis. Because he'll just give you a lay of the land, especially with all the increased listings that are happening, and, you know, make some recommendations for, hey, here are the steps we need to go through to make sure we get the best possible value out of your home. So it's a good thing to start, even if you're months away from potentially pulling the trigger. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right. So we did two parts of a series with Jonathan Cho and also our friend Tom Wolfe, a recovery advocate, out on the streets of Seattle, looking in the Belltown neighborhood in the Chinatown International District. We heard the first part on Monday, second part on Tuesday. Well, we've put them together in one big special. It's called Hell on Earth, our undivided special report about how the city of Seattle is trying to, it seems, push the homeless drug addicts into de facto detainment zones to keep them out of the downtown core during the World Cup, a similar tactic that they used during the All-Star Games. You can watch that across all of our platforms. It's available right now. I'm also working on some other stories ahead of the World Cup, and this will kind of hint at one of them. But, you know, so what Jonathan Cho has noticed, and he's down there covering these issues more than anyone else. And it's remarkable the amount of expertise he has in this area. And what he's noticed, you know, is they're not being as aggressive in clearing the homeless, like if they're in Belltown or if they're in the Chinatown International District, because basically what they want, it seems, is for a tourist to be able to stay in the downtown core in one of the hotels, go to Pike Place Market, do all the things, Seattle-y things there in the waterfront, and then walk to the stadium for World Cup games and not see the worst of what Seattle has to offer. And so they're sort of pushing them out of there. And I will say, here's some video. Went to Pike Place Market as part of this. Beautiful. Vibrant. Go ahead. Lovely. Packed. Absolutely packed. And I love, for the record, I love Pike Place Market. I love it. I like the Pike Place Alley. I like the restaurants. You can get some beautiful cheap flowers down there. But it was fascinating to watch that because it's like a tale of two cities. Because then you go up two blocks to 3rd and Pine, 4th and Pine. And this is what it looks like. Looks dystopian. Can you even tell what used to be? Oh, it's just vacant storefronts. That was an Abercrombie and Fitch, by the way. Just vacant, boarded up storefronts. Occasionally, they'll try to paint some sort of work of art so it doesn't just look like a boarded up storefront. There's even the Starbucks. Remember? That used to be like the Starbucks in Westlake Park. Now they use it as like an advertisement, all the windows. I mean, the store is empty. There's nothing in there. And all the homeless people. And then 3rd and Pine even, although we were just talking about a violent crime that occurred there. If you're familiar with how much drug activity is usually right there. I saw none. I didn't see one drug user when I was down there in the middle of the day. It was a Friday on 3rd and Pine. Doesn't mean it's not dangerous. I mean, we just talked about the violent random assault on an elderly man there at night. But it is very clear where the drug users that we saw and the dealers and all that we saw in Belltown and Chinatown ID have come from. And there's always been some of that element there, especially at 12th and Jackson. But it's absolutely overloaded now. So do I still think, like, look, I struggle with this because I want the World Cup to be a good experience for Seattle businesses. I don't think all Seattle voters and all Seattleites and all Seattle businesses have elected this class of politician. I certainly don't want any visitors to our city to be harmed or to be exposed to some of this horror. Absolutely not children. So I want people to be able to come here and experience the World Cup. But I also want our city to actually solve the problem, not just sweep it away. And it doesn't seem like the current mayor has any desire to do that. And so I'm working on a story about the sort of vacancy issue. I think we'll probably air later on this month and comparing Seattle to other places. One of the things I really noticed, though, remember I was down in Portland covering the initial kind of siege on the ICE facility there. And at the time, the governor of Oregon and the mayor of Portland were downplaying, oh, Portland's a lovely city, it's fine. And so I went with my friend Tara Fowle, who's a street photographer around downtown Portland. She covers the homeless situation down there. And this reminded me of it because one of the things that became very apparent in Portland is the worst of the crisis was in Chinatown. The worst of the drug element was in the Chinatown International District in Portland. Where is the worst of the drug element at in Seattle? Chinatown. And I'm sorry, you go out there and you look at the drug abusers, they're not Asian. It's not like the Asian American community has a big drug problem. No, they're Black and white and Hispanic. And maybe a few Native Americans. So you have these very woke cities on the West Coast that are pushing the criminal element onto the Asian community. Because what? They don't think they'll say anything? They don't think they'll fight back? There's a reason for this. There's a reason for this, that it's happening in multiple blue cities. It's not by accident. Again, if the drug users were all Asian, I'd be like, well, yeah, it makes sense that the Asian drug users are there. They're not Asian. I didn't see one Asian actually like high on being one of the high on drugs or dealing drugs. There were a few trying to walk around. So there's something else going on there. And I think it's because they believe, and a lot of people in the Chinatown International District do not speak English. And I think it's because they believe that in their, a lot of them are elderly, that they're not going to fight. They're not going to push back. They're not going to ask questions. And I think that's why they're stuck with it. It's really quite disgusting. All right, we've got a double dose of unbelievable. Let's get to it. Whoop. All right. This is really something else. Headline from the Center Square. Seattle seeks more transportation funding just 2 years into a record $1.5 billion levy. So you might recall, just 2 years ago, voters in Seattle approved the largest transportation levy in the city's history, $1.55 billion. But 2 years later, they're already coming out saying, oh, we need to generate more money. These people are insane. The Seattle Department of Transportation published applications online for the Transportation Funding Task Force this week. The initiative is supported by $1.5 million to $2 million in funding from the 2024 transportation levy, which started at a rate of 65 cents per $1,000 of assessed property value. So they had the largest transportation tax levy in city's history. It wasn't enough. Now they're going to spend $2 million on a task force to figure out how they can get more money. Got it. So Nicole was checking out the applications online for this. It says, help shape the future of funding for Seattle streets, sidewalks and bridges. What they really mean is for the future of Seattle's bike lanes. It says, join the transportation funding task force. So it says, we're looking for community members to help answer a critical question. How do we generate equitable, sustainable funding to help reduce the gap between Seattle's transportation needs and the resources available to build and maintain them? So they're looking for citizens to join the task force. Here, the task force, again, which is about transportation funding, okay? Transportation funding. Here's what it says. You don't need to be a transportation or finance expert to apply. Yep. In fact, no relevant expertise whatsoever. And that will be a group of people who will really get us out of this situation. You don't need to be an expert in transportation or finance for the Committee on Transportation and Finance.
You just
need to be a human person. It says we're looking for collaborative people who care about Seattle's transportation system. Oh my gosh. And then it says that they will compensate you $75 an hour if you demonstrate financial hardship. Okay. First of all, I do think that you should be paid to be on a committee like this.
If you have to give them a significant amount of your time, that makes sense.
Yeah, it says, well, it's only 3 to 6 hours per month. So
that's
yeah.
what I'm saying. So I think that if you're a volunteer, you're volunteering your time. Mm-hmm.
And frankly, I want people who are able to volunteer 3 to 6 hours per month because they don't need the money, because I feel like they'll make better decisions than people who are like, oh, I need, you know,
my next fix.
$225 for the month. And yeah, so,
you know, they'll be at the top of the list.
But I'm glad I qualify because I don't have any transportation or finance experience. And so maybe I'll apply for this. It's just,
yeah,
just
you don't need
wonderful.
To drive. You
no.
just, no.
I'll take my bike there. I got a bike, you know, mm-hmm. I got an e-bike.
Silliness.
I'll take it there. All right. Let's get to our second dose of unbelievable, which is actually a good one. So as you know, in Washington State and other blue states, there was starting to be this creeping and creepy sort of restrictions being placed on foster families, where they basically had to abide by the ideology of the state where they were trying to foster kids in. And of course, in Washington, one of those ideologies is that a boy can be a girl and a girl can be a boy, or they, them, or they, there, or whatever crazy sort of identity they've been indoctrinated to believe they are. And even if this child has no home, they will turn you away as a foster family if you say that you're not willing to now or in the future abide by your child's desired gender ideology and get them gender affirming care. They'd rather literally the child not have a family. It's sick and twisted. So there's a lawsuit over this from our friends at the Center Square, a lawsuit against DCYF to proceed as agency updates foster care guidelines. So it says DCYF has lost a bid to have a lawsuit against the agency dismissed and is now moving this month to amend the policy that got them sued. A federal district court ruled late last month that a Washington state licensing rule requiring foster parents to socially transition foster children plausibly violates the First Amendment. Of course it does. Well, it violates common sense and decency. But yeah, I mean, especially if it's on religious grounds. It's like, no, I mean, when I say it violates common sense and decency, if you have a loving home to place a child in, I mean, well, that's the thing is they don't consider it a loving home unless you allow the child to be transitioned. Then you're not you cannot possibly be a loving home for a child if you don't believe that a boy should be transitioned into a girl or vice versa. So it says the Center Square asked DCYF if their policy requiring foster families to embrace gender ideology remains in place, and we received the following response. They said the current Washington code is being revised. DCYF received public comment on proposed changes as part of the rulemaking process. So it seems like they are now revising it. What will the revision look like? I think that's certainly a good question. But we have it's hard to find people who want to foster kids anyway. The whole system's an absolute mess, and you want to put this insane restriction on them as your schools in the state and teachers are the ones trying to indoctrinate these kids to believe that they're transgender, and then you'll only let them go to a home that will transition them when you have all these loving families. And I think a lot of foster families tend to be religious families. I don't have any stats on that, but the ones I know are religious. And the ones I know sure as hell wouldn't socially transition a child or allow for that. So you are eliminating a big part of the pool for foster families. And it's disgusting. And I'm glad this is in federal court, because if it was up to the state Supreme Court, they would say, oh yeah, you can't have this kid if you don't socially transition them. All right. Has Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal been helping Cuba get oil? Yes, she admitted to it. Via Russia? Is this Russian interference? Mm-hmm. What is it? No, Russian collusion. Is this Russian collusion of a different kind? We'll hear what she had to say. Coming up next, first, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. They are Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers, wonderful advertisers on our show for 3 years now, and they can help you in a variety of ways. On an individual basis, make sure you're up to date on all the rules and regulations. They help at the state level, trying to push back against bad policy, and they also help via lawsuits. They've got a really big property rights lawsuit that they're part of right now, pushing back against some of these insane landlord-tenant laws that have come down the pipe in recent years. So, and they have events on a variety of topics all year long. So go to RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org to check the organization out and consider becoming a member today. So somebody said this in the comments at the end of yesterday's show, and I just hadn't seen it. But Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, big friend of Cuba, big fan of Cuba and socialism in general. So she was giving a speech and talking about the impact that U.S. sanctions on Cuba are having on the population. And I don't doubt that they are. But the fact is, Cuba is an enemy. Cuba's being aided by us, our enemies, some of our biggest enemies, like Russia. Here's what Congresswoman Jayapal had to say that's raising eyebrows.
In January, Trump issued an executive order threatening tariffs on any country supplying fuel to Cuba. This was this January, just a few months ago. And oil shipments from Venezuela, that's where Cuba had been getting its oil, were halted after the U.S. operations to kidnap Nicolas Maduro. Since January, only one Russian tanker of oil has made it to Cuba. In fact, it landed just a couple of days before I landed. And one tanker has enough oil basically for 10 to 14 days of Cuba's oil needs. So it's a very limited amount of time. Now, Russia has said they're going to send another tanker. I was in conversations with the ambassadors from Mexico and some other places, and I know other countries in Latin America are trying to figure out how to get oil there. But it is a crisis beyond imagination. Just this past Friday, on May 1st, Trump signed a broad executive order that widens sanctions and allows for new penalties similar to what we have for Iran and Russia against foreign banks and firms that are dealing with Cuba. And it also reinforces the ban on U.S. tourism. I have called these sanctions an economic bombing of the infrastructure of Cuba. It is illegal. It is against the law. We've been talking about this in Iran, obviously, to bomb the infrastructure of any country. That is against international law. This is essentially doing the same thing. It is bombing the infrastructure of Cuba with economic sanctions that essentially ensure that the infrastructure collapses.
Yeah, that's kind of the point. Now, I don't care if Congressman Jayapal wants to criticize what President Trump is doing on any issue, but what he's doing in Cuba and the pressure that he's trying to put on Cuba. But what is a problem, and what I would be shocked if there isn't some sort of law against it, is apparently colluding to try to get around, help Cuba get around some of the economic pressures being put on it by the United States of America, suggesting that she in some way is trying to facilitate getting oil to Cuba. The president of the United States is trying to stop oil from getting to Cuba to make sure that he can fulfill the aims of the United States of America. So to me, she needs to be dragged in front of some sort of congressional committee over that and figure out who was she communicating with what countries, and is she actually aiding a foreign government in trying to get out of sanctions by the United States, put down by the president of the United States. That's incredibly disturbing. So I would be shocked if there's not some fallout for the congresswoman from our state on that issue. But thank you, somebody, for bringing it up yesterday so we could talk about it today. All right, Miranda's not here today. Well, she's in the chat today, but she had to get a tooth yanked and a bone graft in this morning. I think she thought she could do that and still do Florida Report. And if you've had a tooth out, I was like, you're not going to be able to do that and still do Florida Report. She did send me a picture of her tooth, however. Really gross looking. Thank you, Miranda. But we usually do Florida Report with her. I figured we, Nicole and I, could just take care of it this week. So let's get to our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
I won't be able to do it justice, but I'll try my best. Okay, I'll start with this one, Nicole. From Florida's Voice, Florida CFO announces arrest of $2.8 million SNAP fraud scheme. And I wonder if this comes, remember Brooke Rollins was out and saying, oh, even in red state, she said, we've got this red state with like some insane, was it 40,000? I can't remember. No, maybe it was something else. A huge number of SNAP recipients driving luxury vehicles. Maybe she was talking about Florida. She didn't name the red state she was talking about. But hey, fraud is not just a blue state issue. I think the blue states like to try to hide it and happens probably more. But it says Florida Chief Financial Officer Blaise Ingoglia on Wednesday announced the arrest. Miranda's going to send me notes on how I failed. On Wednesday, announced the arrest of a man accused of orchestrating a multi-million dollar public assistance fraud scheme involving federal food benefits. According to the Department of Finance Services, Abbas Rahman was arrested April 30th following an investigation by the agency's Criminal Investigations Division into allegedly targeting the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, commonly known as SNAP. So they said that he was abusing it, $2.8 million, and now he's been arrested. And the state did it. See the difference there?
Mm-hmm.
The state did it. The federal government didn't have to come in and do it. All right, Nicole, you want to set this next one up for us? You want me to set it up?
Go ahead. You set it up.
Okay. All right. On the education front, the Florida Department of Education unveils a FACT U.S. history framework, a Florida-developed alternative to advanced placement. So it says the Department of Education just created a framework, State Department of Education, for the Florida Advanced Courses and Tests U.S. History course, a Florida-developed alternative to advanced placement. The FACT U.S. History course delivers a rigorous, comprehensive exploration of American history and represents a significant step forward in expanding high-quality acceleration opportunities for Florida students. So, like, what's special about this?
So they were trying to, this is part of a 2023 law against woke ideologies in the classroom. And so there was a bunch of, I think it was centered around African American history.
Or like Christopher Columbus evil.
Right, exactly. Okay. And so then they implemented this new education plan where they're going to offer these classes that are more fact-based classes, although they call it Florida Advanced Courses and Tests, but fact-based classes.
Oh, I see. Okay. I was wondering what that stood for.
This is the latest one where they're focusing on a new, like a college course that you can take, which, you know, my niece is graduating and she's already 2 years into Gonzaga. It's crazy
because
you can take so many classes in school now.
Yeah.
So I think this is a great opportunity. So in high school, you're not forced into classes that are, you know, teachers union supported, woke ideology supported, things like that. Although in Florida, it doesn't seem as much of a problem. It'd be nice to if we offered classes around here.
It says this one will focus on American identity and national character. So like not teaching kids to hate America. It'll also include political and constitutional history, which is good. I mean, I think everyone gets some level of constitutional history in school, but I would like to see it be more robust. So more Americans graduate understanding their rights, the background of the Constitution, maybe some of the flaws of the Constitution.
Absolutely.
All of those things.
A little bit of everything.
We'll have more on constitutions coming up next.
Fact-based.
Okay.
Emotional-based.
One more on the Florida education front. Teachers union parents sue Florida over vouchers and charter school funding. Good God. So the teachers union and some probably woke parents getting on board to sue the state of Florida because they want to hold kids captive in public education.
It is crazy.
They want to hold kids captive in public education. You cannot tell me that you care about a child's success if you want to give them fewer options for education. And you have the Florida Education Association president, Andrew Spahr, at a press conference saying this was their last resort.
This lawsuit is a last resort. We cannot wait for another year. We cannot wait for other elected officials. Our students cannot lose one more day of education.
Okay,
they're not losing anything.
You can join us now. She has to punch the Florida reports. That's why she wasn't on camera.
Yeah.
They're not losing anything. They're getting another opportunity, and you're mad because there's competition. Competition always leads to better results, and so you just have to offer something better in public schools so that you can compete.
He was really taking advantage of that moment, speaking
dramatically.
Very dramatically.
Yes, that was his moment in the spotlight.
Wait. He cannot take.
You will never take
another day.
Public schools. Good stuff.
Crazy. But anyway. Anyway.
Okay.
Well, congratulations to my niece, by the way.
Like, yes, that's so exciting.
She was going to go to Central, and then Gonzaga was like, we'll take you and transfer all these credits, and it's great. She's awesome.
I love that. God, ahead of the game.
She is.
All right, Nicole, thank you very much. Yay. And whether we did it or justice or not, that has been today's edition of Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
All right, we'll talk about the Constitution Wars coming up next. A lot of fun. First, if you're looking to save some money as a family, who isn't? If you could save thousands of dollars a year and barely lift a finger, you just got to lift a phone to your face like this. Why would you not do it? FirstMarkInsurance.com. Can you come back to me for a second? I just started doing this because I kept doing this. Apparently the kids make fun of you do this because they don't even know what that means.
Maybe it's an old school receiver.
Well, no, that's what I mean. It's like we do it like this, like talk on the phone like that, right?
Yes.
You wouldn't be like, if you were miming talking on the phone.
Yeah.
So I'm trying not to do this anymore. Anyway.
I like that better.
Okay, me too. Anyway, firstmarkinsurance.com. Firstmarkinsurance.com. Take the First Mark Challenge today. They'll go over your current insurance, talk to you about your insurance needs, come back with their recommendations. And like so many Undivided viewers and listeners who have been able to save hundreds of dollars a month, thousands of dollars a year, their goal is to save you money. I mean, they want to make sure you have good insurance that's actually going to protect the things you worked hard for. But they're always going to have an eye on savings. And they'll do that every year as they go and look at it proactively. actively to renew your policy. Mike and I saved thousands this year when they did that. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they're always going to have your best interest in mind. All right. We said we were going to do it. We're doing it. Constitution wars have begun, and Bob Ferguson lost the war about 5 minutes in to bidding. So, of course, Governor Ferguson on the show on Monday, was it? I think on the show on Monday, we talked about how Governor Ferguson had auctioned off for the Thurston County Democratic Party a signed copy of the Constitution, which, of course, is just blasphemous. Absolutely blasphemous. But he got it for like $175. $175. And I thought, well, first of all, that's just a stain on the Constitution. And we can do a lot better than $175 because our viewers and friends actually respect the Constitution. And so do I. So I was like, I'll auction off a signed copy. All right. Do you have this, Nicole? Yeah, there it is. Constitution Wars. The website is live. The bidding is live. So you will get a signed copy of the Constitution. Here's the specific book. It's like the Constitution and some other writings from the Founding Fathers. Something a little more elegant and classy than a little pocket Constitution.
It's very
pretty.
You
know? Isn't it very nice?
Well, very nice on a bookshelf.
Yes. So I will, once I know who the winning bidder is, I will give you a personalized inscription. And also, if you're within 150 miles and I don't think you're a serial killer, I will hand deliver it to you. Hand delivered. And at this point, I was checking. So the bidding went live at 8 a.m. this morning. It opened up to subscribers first, and now it's public. I was just refreshing the page. For a while, the bidding was sitting at $1,776. Now it's at $2,000.
Whoa.
$2,025 is the high bid. And we beat Bob within 5 minutes. Not that difficult to do. And the proceeds, 100% for charity, going to our friends at We Heart Seattle, as selected by undivided viewers and listeners. Our subscribers selected that charity. So right now, high bid. You know, at that price, I'll probably hand deliver it and maybe buy you lunch. I feel like that's a high enough bid. Nicole's looking
deliver
at me like,
some taco time.
Yeah. Okay, there's nothing wrong with taco time.
No, it's my favorite. That's why I said it.
Oh, goodness. Nothing wrong with that. So I like this. You know, it's a war Bob didn't even agree to be part of, but he was thrust into the war regardless, and he lost immediately. But I think we can do even better than 2025, although that is a great bid. You guys got in there. You were just bidding up a storm, so I appreciate you. And it goes to a great cause, and it's 100% tax deductible. So win, win, win. But the biggest victory, of course, is beating Bob Ferguson. That is the biggest victory, and it will give me joy for months to come. All right, some comments from the live stream on the homeless repeat offender charged with rape of a teenager. J-Can says in Florida, he'd be put to death. Here, he gets released. Well, he hasn't been released yet. Milkman, criminal justice, when only the criminals receive the justice. Yeah, that's all criminal justice means. Literally, criminal justice.
It's crazy. He was just shot a few months ago or last year or whatever.
No, well, that was not the rapist. That was
The guy that was walking down the track.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody.
That was one of them. Yeah.
But you just got shot down there and you're just back. Like, yeah. I'll just do this again.
That's probably why he was limping, actually. Yeah.
No, I think that's why he was limping. Yeah. But yeah, I just don't get it.
Super disturbing. Dark.
Never learn.
Lily, we need to change the vocabulary and stop calling them homeless unhoused if it's due to severe addiction. Call them vagrants. One time, a long time ago, when I first came to Seattle, I wrote an article and I used the word vagrant in the headline. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it was. People were like, you can't call them vagrants. And I was like, oh, I didn't know. I thought that was fine.
Wow.
I'll use it now, though.
Everything's offensive.
I know. On the second suspect arrested, the other one still at large in the attack on the elderly man, Napoleon says Ahmed Osman. Yep, that sounds like a nice and near American name. Look, America is a melting pot.
Yeah.
But these days, in a sanctuary jurisdiction, I'm sorry, if I spot a name that stands out to me, I am going to wonder if the person's in the country legally.
Yeah, too bad we can't ask that, so then we don't have to wonder. Yeah,
right. Nanak of the North, good thing Seattle still has their street cameras working. Otherwise, there would have been little evidence of the assault. Seattle's mayor wants to eliminate the street cameras, I know. And that's just so the timing of that.
Yeah, and I have noticed. I think police want to keep them. I think it it's being pointed out everywhere
it
that
helps.
This was because of a camera. Yes. We were able to get this guy that severely beat this old man.
Yep.
So I really hope she reconsiders.
That is a good point that they made sure to note that and to use the footage and to make sure the footage got widely disseminated. Mm-hmm. Greg, as crazy as stuff is in Washington State, you have every damn right to ask if these criminals are here illegally. To hell with all the feel-good stuff. These people are dangerous and should be treated as such.
Well, because he has quite the history. So if he has that history and he's not here illegally.
That would be a relevant part of the story.
Very relevant.
Let's see. On our the downtown Seattle stuff and all the empty storefronts. Baron of Gray Matter, we need the Seattle version of the Guardian Angels to patrol downtown. They'll become famous. They became famous for patrolling New York City's subway. We need this now. We need something because whatever we're doing is not working. As I said on the show earlier this week, the fact that there's not a 24-hour police presence on 3rd and Pine is it's not forgivable. It's crazy.
The next comment's my favorite.
Okay. Spinner, not winner. Brandy and Jonathan saw a lot of strangers in their series. Yes, strangers. They were all strangers. Homeless strangers.
It's shocking. The Seattle Times is shocking.
It is, and I just refuse to not be shocked by it because you can't normalize that.
No.
You cannot normalize news coverage that for the sake of, you know, not offending a group of people that does commit a disproportionate amount of crime, you won't just call him what he is. He's homeless.
If you can't verify it, I get it. If it just, you're not going based on looks.
Police literally say he's homeless.
Literally in all of the paperwork.
It's in the police report. Mm-hmm. Nancy Campbell. So they are putting the homeless in concentration camps. Definitely in quarantine zones. I wouldn't call it a concentration camp. I don't want to abuse that phrase because that means something very serious. Seattle needs volunteers to get paid $75 an hour. Yeah, you're not a volunteer if you're getting paid $75 an hour. Let's be clear. I don't give a chuck. My apologies for missing my Boop sponsorship the past couple of days. Work got in the way of life. Thanks to the Undivided team for all the great work. I'm looking forward to bidding 1776 on the signed Constitution. There was a bid for a while that was 1776. I wonder if that was you. I haven't looked at the names yet. But that was a good bid, but it got beat. But it was a good bid. Matthew Cook, wanted urbanists who live downtown, ride bikes everywhere, and hate cars. Yeah, that's all. That whole committee is going to be stacked with.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, it's going to be just embarrassing.
Decisions. No experience.
Stupid also says, wow, talk about people rearranging the patio furniture on the Titanic. What's that in reference to? Rearranging the patio furniture on the the homeless probably. Like you're just pushing them here. You're just, the city's still sinking. It's still going downhill, you're just rearranging everything. Yeah, sure. I think that's it. On DCYF changing the tune on forcing foster parents to accept gender transitions. Let's see. John Lee, CPA, so sad for the children. Yeah, I agree. Jayapal, maybe helping Cuba get oil? Linda C, why would you admit it? Linda C, could that be considered treason? I mean, that's the first word that came to mind when I saw it. It's like, that sounds, apply that to any other country.
Cuba and Russia.
But also, Russia. And aren't you the one who's like, yay, help Ukraine? So what is, a lot of questions need to be asked and answered in this.
But that's the extent of their TDS.
Yes.
They will help the enemy to, get a dig at Trump.
Yeah.
It's wild.
It is wild. Donatello, she's violated the Logan Act and the Cuban embargo and sanctions. Yeah, so we'll see. Maybe, I mean, if I were her, I'd be worried because the Trump administration will absolutely arrest and prosecute you. That is something they will 100% do. Just a quick note before we get to sanity check, because we didn't pull it today and maybe we should have, but the Spencer Pratt LA mayoral debate, did you guys watch some of that?
I saw a little bit. Yeah.
He is, for someone who has never been in this space, he did so well.
He's good at media. He's really good at media.
I mean, he's been on camera a lot. Mm-hmm. But in terms of politics, like, oh my gosh, he was quick. He was funny. He was brutal. He was telling the socialist, this is the clip I should have pulled. My apologies. He was telling the socialist, like, I invite her to come down to, you know, whatever, this homeless camp under the bridge where she can, you know, try to get them whatever help or something without a cop there. She'll get stabbed in the neck. And I was like, she will get stabbed in the neck. And he's just being so brutally honest about the state of things. But he came with a lot of good research and facts. Now, do I think Spencer Pratt will win? That would be a very difficult sell because LA is a super blue city. But maybe people are tired enough. I don't know. I think you have to be realistic. But dang, go watch some of that because it was really something else.
It's pretty wild. And I do think that, you know, all these politicians are the typical people that are jumping in those races are people that... They're saying what they do and have to say. And we've had this discussion before. Everybody listens to their stinking advisors and their, you know, oh, do this, do that. And nobody just comes at it from a person that lives in the area that deals with the stuff, that wants to help people. And nobody just puts themselves in those shoes and says what they, what the rest of us are all thinking.
Without a filter. Without any filter. Care or concern and without, for, yeah.
Yeah, without caring what some advisor or some consultant is saying on the side.
Yeah.
Like, nope, I'm going to say how it is.
Very authentic at a time when I think people are craving authenticity. And that's one of the reasons Trump does so well, is he's very authentic. He just is who he is.
Yep.
All right, Nicole. Thank you. Yeah. Let's see. We'll get to Sanity Check coming up next. First, our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital is having another one of his live webinars. It's going to be his Impact of Energy live webinar coming up May 21st at 3:30 p.m. Pacific. While most investors are focused on AI, crypto, and tech, the real story is happening somewhere else. Energy. So you want to know whether your current advisor is underestimating energy's impact on your portfolio. So Zach is going to talk about that. He's going to do a full reveal of how Bulwark is focused on risk management, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So join Zach's Impact of Energy webinar May 21st at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Totally free. Register now at knowyourriskpodcast.com. While you're there, you can also subscribe to Zach's daily market recap. He also has a podcast, got YouTube channel. So just go to knowyourriskpodcast.com to link up with our friend Zach Abraham. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right. This clip comes to us from the city of Linwood, Washington, where a council member admits that she doesn't value the American flag very much at all.
It's clear that Linwood is the most diverse city in all of Snohomish County. And to me, a pride flag is way more relatable than an American flag. I would not raise an American flag at my house because I wouldn't. I wasn't even born here. But I would raise a pride flag. And as the most diverse city in all of Snohomish County, I don't think that I'm the only one who would maybe choose to have 27 other flags in flag parks.
27 other flags, but not the American flag. They're debating over what flags can go up in a city park and stuff. And she wants you to know that she values the pride flag above the American flag. I'm not even from here. Ma'am, wherever you are from, Isabella Mata, you have come to the country of opportunity. In a state like Washington, you get to serve as a city council member and you still have no gratitude for what America has given you. Shameful.
Relatable. Everybody relates to the American flag if you're an American, but pride flag?
Nope.
Only if you're in those groups, special groups,
I guess.
You can't
help these people. You can't help them.
Good grief.
All right. So a reminder, the bidding will end Monday at 8 a.m. on our signed copy of the Constitution. All proceeds benefiting We Heart Seattle. Totally tax deductible in the Constitution wars we have started against Governor Bob Ferguson for being blasphemous in signing his own copy of the Constitution. What else? We're still running our promo, once yearly promo going on right now. It'll be going on through the end of May. Go to patreon.com/undivided, patreon.com/undivided. Use the promo code USA30, 30% off an entire year. Brings the cost down to $3.50 a month, which I think is pretty good. And you can support all the wonderful work that we're doing. I think it's wonderful. Can I call it wonderful? I think it's great.
And be part of the Cool
fantastic.
Kid Club.
Fantastic. And be part of the Cool Kid Club. And watch episodes of Sundays with Subscribers. This week, former progressive state senator Joe Wynn is now the head of the Seattle Chamber of Commerce at a very interesting time for the city's business community. He's joining me for an in-depth conversation about, among other things, the recent flippant bye comment from Seattle's socialist mayor. So it ought to be quite an interesting interview. That'll be on this week's episode of Sundays with Subscribers. So thank you for being here with us this week on all our live shows. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. Special thank you, of course, to our subscribers. A big welcome to all our newest subscribers who've taken advantage of that promo code. Whew. See you on Sundays with Subscribers. The rest of you, see you Monday at noon on the live show. Have a fan-freaking-tastic week. weekend.
Nobody noticed we were matchy-matchy today.
No.
I kind of want to go out and get pictures at...
You want to, because we're matching?
Donette Studios, remember them?
Oh, little prom-esque pictures. Yeah. Do you want to be the big spoon or the little spoon? Big spoon or the little spoon?
You know, with my cat, I'm the big spoon.
Okay, I'll be the little spoon.
I'm used to it.
Great. All right, see you guys later.